Welcome to Career Conversations. My name is Siobhan Murphy, a careers advisor here in DCU. Today, our focus is on the career choice of entering the family business. And joining me to unpack this very important subject is Eric Clinton. Eric is an associate professor in entrepreneurship at DCU Business School and director of the National Centre for the Family Business, which is based here in DCU. So first of all, really, thank you so much for joining us on the episode today, Eric. It's really, really important topic. The first question I might just kick off with you on is, can you maybe, I suppose, give us a bit of a deeper understanding of the family business landscape in Ireland?
Yeah, so the question is, you know, what's a family business? How many are there? You know, where are they in my community? You know, whether you live in a village, a town, or a city. What we know about family business in Ireland, 64% of our firms our family business. Now, what that means, I'd encourage you to think about or even to visualize where you live. So walk down the main street, and as I said, in your village, your town, or your city. And if you look left and right, you can be almost guaranteed that the stores you see, the restaurants, the hotels, the car dealerships, are family business and multi-generational family firms. What we know is more than 50% of our GDP comes from family firms, and more than 50% of our employment on the island of Ireland actually comes from family business. And what else do we know is that these family firms are geographically located peripherally. So whether you're in northwest Donegal or southwest Cork, the family business is the heartbeat of Ireland. And probably when I get asked that question, how do you know, you know, the presence of family firms? And, you know, a big part of Irish society is Gaelic football, and the GAA does phenomenal work. For me, the litmus test is always the presence of a family business and the sponsorship of a GAA team. So if you think of your local GAA team, I can be almost guaranteed that the family business will sponsor it. So what's the relevance of that? The relevance is, and family business contribute economically to our communities, but also in a social context. For example, supporting GAA teams, supporting scouting organizations, supporting, you know, whatever it might be, hospices in a community, supporting church or whatever. So they have an economic and a social contribution. Now, another thing which I think is interesting, how does that compare, you know, nationally here in Ireland, or how does it compare internationally? We compare not so bad, but not great either. So to give you an example, if we look at on not so far from us in Europe, France will have about 80% of France is family firms, and it gets higher in Italy, 85%. So when you're thinking about, you know, long established, you know, vineyards in the, for example, parts of the south of France, or, you know, wineries in the north of France. These are long established. Some of the family business we work in France could be 15, 20 generations old. And then it gets extreme then if we go into parts of India. India, for example, 95%. And then, you know, our family firms, they don't know anything else but be a multi-generational family business.
And can I ask you then, Eric, when you say 64%, is that including, say, farming and that kind of broader agribusiness there as well?
No, not at all, actually. That's just pure business. So that's what you see on your high street, your, as I said, your car dealership, your construction company. That doesn't incorporate our farms. So, you know, we're an agricultural economy. Although we have lots of foreign direct investment here in Ireland, we're at our heart, you know, true to our core and our core values is agriculture. So no, it doesn't include. And that creeps up very much into the kind of mid-80s when we incorporate the family business and the family farm.
Okay, that's very interesting. So, because oftentimes that I think I know when I meet students that they, you know, they forget that, you know, the farm is a business and they're not thinking about it from that point of view. And I know many of our students and graduates, you know, do, I suppose, particularly around farming, would face that kind of dilemma about, you know, whether they are going to go into the family farm or will they, you know, go out and have a separate career for a number of years and then perhaps take over the family farm in time. And it all depends on age and the size of the farm. And is there can two generations, you know, get a living from the farm? So that kind of brings us on into these kind of broader decisions in around the career choice of going into the family business, whether that's a firm or whether that's a farming business itself. So typically, Eric, you know, what are the things that anybody should be considering if they're looking at a career choice about entering the family business?
So the first thing I would say to anybody, I suppose my job, a significant part of my job is probably meeting a lot of people who come to you, Siobhan, next generation guys and girls who are potentially considering to join the family business. And will I, won't I? And obviously it's unquestionable. They love their parents and they feel this somewhat obligation to get involved. And they come to me and go, listen, Eric, what do I do? And I think the first thing I would suggest to anybody listening here is to be honest to yourself. I think you'll find as one goes through life and goes through your career, that's probably the best bit of advice I can give anyone, is just to be honest to yourself. If you know that your heart is just not in waste management or is not in construction or is not in, I don't know, hotels or haulage or whatever industry it might be, if you just know that's not for you, well, then allow that to come to the fore. I would absolutely not encourage somebody to enter into an industry or to an environment that just feel, nah, I want to be a musician, I want to be a lawyer, I want to be, you know, a teacher, whatever it might be. Now, I will come to this in a later point in time. There is no reason why, for example, you can't be an owner in a family business and not be a teacher, a lawyer, or a musician. However, say you're sitting there and you're like, Eric, grown up in this business from, you know, the age of 5 years of age, I've been working in the family farm, a family business, the family farm. You know, weekends, holidays, Christmas, you know, summer holidays, it's just being work. I've known no different. And now you're asking, oh, well, I've, you know, about to finish university or I'm, you know, midway through university. I'm trying to plan, what do I do next with my, you know, dare say life. So first thing I would say to you is, this doesn't work for everybody, but there is a better practice, or you can't say best practice, but there's a better practice, which we've looked at literally thousands of Irish family firms and international family firms. And what the research has shown is they would encourage you to work outside the family business. So let me give you some context. So let's say you're 21, 22 years of age, you're finishing up in DCU. My suggestion is have the conversation with your family. And I'll come back to that in a second, but I would encourage you, most businesses we find that are multi-generational. And you go, what do you mean by multi-generational? So if it's a third, fourth, fifth generation family business in this country, so some of the ones you might name, you know, household names like Flavin's Porridge, seventh generation, Barry's Tea, fourth generation, you know, Keeling Group, fourth generation, some big, long established family firms, firms. So my suggestion to you is to work outside the business if you can. Some of the farms, like one of the speakers we had at one of our events was a fascinating family business, which is Manor Farm, which is what's very interesting with Manor Farm, which just give you some context to it. If you go to your local supermarket, 85% of the chicken we eat in this country, 85% of the chicken we eat comes from their farm. It's a phenomenally huge, huge business. Eighth generation family business in all over it, but predominantly in County Monaghan. Now, what's interesting with them, and for their eighth generation family business, their rule as such is if you want to be considered to join the family business, and you know, Vincent Carton, who was the CEO at the time, spoke at our events in DCU. He stood up and he said, listen, if any of my next generation want to get involved, they must work for 5 years outside the family business. They must be at manager level in another business. It doesn't have to be a family business, another business. And they will be interviewed, but not by me or not by their uncle or their aunt. It's somewhat objectivity to, you know, an interview process. So That would be my thought. But even then, it's a strange thing to say, but make mistakes on someone else's money is what some people would often say. You know, go out, experience the world. I don't think you can put a price. Personally, you know, what I did, and I'm very glad I did, I worked abroad. So I would encourage, if you can, if it's an opportunity, go with a plan. But I wouldn't just go and say, listen, God, I would keep an eye on the family business, obviously be involved, and, you know, you're communicating with your folks and that kind of stuff, but or your family or whatever your parental situation is. But I would encourage you to join a network of family business next generation people. And that sounds all very intimidating. And God, what does that mean? Listen, it's not. You're 21, 22, either you're mid-20s, mid-30s, whatever it might be. There are networks of people exactly like you here in Ireland, right across Europe, and very much international, who have the same questions. Do I get involved? When do I get involved? Who do I report to? What do I enter the business as? Do I call him Dad? Do I call him Kevin? Do I call him John? So my suggestion too is to, and listen, these are, it's a very informal, you normally go to a networking event, some family business speaker will come up, you know, give you some insights to running or managing or getting involved in the family business. You might have a glass of wine or a beer, and you just get an opportunity to ask these questions to and of other people exactly like you. So that would be my suggestion. Work outside, but keep an eye on returning, and if absolutely possible, consider joining some form of a network.
And if we kind of say to yourself, so that's some of really terrific ideas about, you know, the kind of the bit of the pre-planning, go out, maybe learn from others, you know, I suppose, as you say, maybe make some mistakes outside of the family business, but also, I suppose, develop your skills outside the family business and be able to bring something new and fresh back in. But just say we go through the scenario then that the decision has been made, you're in, you're going in under some heading within the organization. What's the thought process in around the family dynamics and the work-life balance and the work-family dynamic, you know, that tightrope?
Yeah, so it's funny now, we're faced with COVID. And what's interesting, I will answer your question in a second, Sean, but what's really interesting with COVID is, very sadly, actually, succession has been forced upon a lot of family businesses, either because, you know, maybe the leader of the business, you know, he or she has maybe passed away, or they've had to cocoon because, you know, plus 70 years of age, whatever it might be. So a lot of next generation people, while they plan to work outside and plan to, you know, had a different career path, they've kind of had this succession question has come to them a lot quicker than they would have liked. But say you're in a situation, you've decided, listen, I've worked outside the business, or you've decided not to work outside the business, and I'm, you know, maybe I'm 28 or I'm 23 or whatever it is, I'm going to get involved. I'm going to take the plunge into the family business. One thing I would suggest is that there needs to be structure, formalization in it, because you can't have, you know, the kitchen table is the boardroom. And the kitchen table is where all the decisions are made. Dad makes the decision, and we just rock in behind Dad. And if I question Dad or offer a counter argument to Dad, there's a fight. And then my sister will jump in with me. My other sister will jump in with Dad, and it just gets crazy. And then Mom stands in and says, nah, you stop talking, and nobody's talking at dinner. It gets very dysfunctional very quickly. And I'm painting a very negative picture of family business. But for a lot of people maybe listening, that could be the reality, but it shouldn't be. So my suggestion to you, it's like, you know, for example, you go to university, you learn what's proper approach to building a skyscraper. What's the best approach of, you know, planning for irrigation of soil within agriculture? You learn best practice in a university. Well, then the best practice learnings need to be brought into the family business. And a lot of people are going, yeah, that's fine. Like, you know, that works out great if you have, you know, 6,000 people or 10,000 people. Not at all. So if your family business employs, you know, 30, 40, 50 people, there are procedures you have to or should put in place in your organization for a very simple thing. And this is the simplest thing I would say to you. If you're entering into your business, don't call him Dad or don't call her Mom. And that's a really strange thing to say. But when you walk in, hiya, John. So you need to detach the family from the business dynamic. And the other thing I would suggest is about bringing baggage home. So try to, when the business finishes at 5 or 6 in the evening, try to finish it or leave it in the business and not bring it back to the family environment in the evening or at the weekend. Now, that's very difficult to do, and I will talk about that if you wish. But so they will be some things. I can go into more detail on what to do, but very simply, at a start, at a high level, don't call him or her by their mom or dad title.
Well, also, as you're in the kind of parent-child transactional relationship, if you do.
Yes.
You know, one thing that struck me there, and it could be very similar advice, but I think there's something a little bit different about it as well, is siblings in the same business.
Yeah, so siblings, so I apologize for painting very negative, I'm very passionate about family business, but they're a phenomenal organization with the opportunity to grow and to scale and to diversify. And literally what I do in DCU is I work with next generation people. They come in and they're massively full of energy and say, Eric, we have this great family business, but I see so much potential in it. We're second generation and I'd love to become, our turnover at the moment is, you know, 2 million or it's 5 million. I want to have it in the next 5 years and we have a turnover of 15 million. I see an opportunity to move online. I see an opportunity to invest into this and see it go into this market. So there is a huge, if you're entrepreneurial or creative family business, it has an established business for you with resources and knowledge and location and, you know, connections. So then to answer your question, Siobhan, if you're in a family business, and your siblings get involved too. And almost the worst thing a parent can do, let me give you, just make up a scenario. Say it's a situation where it's, you know, the parents and they're leaving the business to three next generation. So three boys, for example, say it's a family business. The worst thing the father or mother can do is to say, right, one third, one third, one third. That's not the best approach. So there is, or has to be, or should be a conversation that's the obligation of the parents as to how the wealth or the ownership is passed on in the family business. I would suggest, you see some family businesses where they'll have a thing called a co-CEO. And what that means is maybe it's a brother and a sister, or two brothers or two sisters, or whatever it might be, lead the business. And my suggestion is that what you find in family businesses, the dynamics that were from the past, as in, you know, you stole my teddy bear when I was 4 years of age, they can prevail through to the 20s and 30s, that the grudge is there. I was never as good as you. Dad always preferred you, or whatever it might be. So there needs to be a method or a means to stop the dynamic of being siblings from a young age in the business creeping into the business environment itself.
Now, one of the things, okay, and we've been kind of, I suppose, expressing the concerns that I know, say, some of our students would come to us about, you know, and that career decision about moving into a family business. But let's look over to the flip side of it. What are the, you know, I suppose, the joys of it?
Well, one thing I would say is there's a legacy aspect. So there's a sense of pride to say, my grandfather started this business and here I am, you know, 50, 60 years later, I'm leading this business. So there's that legacy aspect, which is incredible. The sense of pride you get by looking at pictures on the wall going, that guy started this business. And here I am today, you know, I'm leading or running this business. The next thing I would say is it comes for a lot of family businesses with capital. Now, capital is it. So I work with basically, which is interesting in the business school, I work with two different cohorts of people. I work with family businesses, but I also work with entrepreneurs. So guys and girls who have an entrepreneurial idea coming from the university and they want to grow or scale it. The challenge that a lot of them face is money. They have a great idea, they're very passionate about it, but they have no money. Whereas in a family business context, the family business can, and often does, have potentially a stock or a cash reserve where they could invest into a viable product. So what I mean by that is, and you mentioned farming earlier on, Siobhan. I have a lady who went through the business school 2 years ago, and kind of similar scenario to you painted. Dad came, said, listen, you know, love for you to get involved in the business, and, you know, we could potentially work this together and, you know, be very proud. It's a fourth generation business. But she had to, it kind of broke her heart. So she came to me and said, Eric, what do I do here? Like, you know, I love my dad, obviously, that's unquestionable, and I want the business to grow, but I don't want to go into be a farmer. So what she did and what we worked a lot on, and what they do now, and I won't say the name of the company, but what they've done is they've agreed that the father is going to retain or maintain the business. And then she has a gin business that runs a very, very successful, won lots of national and international awards, a separate gin business, which runs in tandem to it. So my comment there would be, you can look at the existing business, but the opportunity to somewhat pivot or diversify the offering, for example, from farming into selling gin, is hugely there. Another interesting case in point, which is a great family business, if a lot of our students are from kind of Leinster region, great family business in North County Dublin, just outside Nall, is Kyo's.
Oh, yeah.
Kyo's, and a lot of people go, oh, yeah, I know Kyo's, and they'll know them as the crisps company, is kind of what they're very much synonymous with now, you know, sold in our supermarkets across the country. And a lot of you might have read them in the national, but actually international media. If you've flown on Emirates, if you flow economy business class in Emirates, it's an amazing thing. So you could be flying from Perth, Australia to Dubai. You get on and you're having a coffee or you're having your lunch or whatever it is. They give you a packet of crisps, but they're from, North County Dublin, and they have the Kyo's brand. It's a phenomenal story. But the reason I say to you it is, and how the business has diversified and entrepreneurial grown, is it's a farming business and long established family farm in North County Dublin. But the generation now, which has made the crisps and then later the popcorn, their father, Peter, Joe. Peter was the first man in Ireland, which sounds a very strange thing, but if you were listening to this and ask your parents, if your parents went to the supermarket 25 years ago, and they got a bag of potatoes, the first thing you would have come home with a bag of potatoes is you had to wash them.
Yeah.
You had to take the muck off them and you're scrubbing them and then you peel them, whatever it is. Peter Kyo was the first man in Ireland to wash potatoes. Now, it sounds a very basic thing, but it was revolutionary for this country and for European farms. So my point is that and then they started to move into potatoes that can be sold in smaller packs, put into microwaves. So the opportunity to pivot is hugely there.
So I suppose it is beholden on each generation to innovate in how they can see the economic environment or then the needs and requirements and the opportunities in the marketplace. I suppose one thing that's after striking me as well is that we've been talking about the legacy piece there, and it's really, really powerful. What about you're the generation that loses the family business or feels that they have to sell it, invite in other investors? What's going on there for people?
Yeah, so legacy is a good thing, but legacy can also be a bad thing.
Mm.
And two things, if you're listening to this, is you've got to figure out, are you a family-first family business or a business-first family business? And I'll say that again. So two things, basically. Are you a family-first family business or a business-first family business? And naturally, people go, oh, we're family-first. I love my family. I'm very proud of them. Which is absolutely new. I don't question that. But you need to move to the mindset of a business first family business. That, of course, the family is going to be harmonious and there's love in the family. But the business needs to survive. The business needs to survive because it feeds the family. It feeds people in the community. It has the status as being a family business. So with regard to legacy, sometimes the right decision in a family business is to sell that business. Well, it was started by my great-great-grandfather, but it's the right decision commercially and for the business first family business is to sell this business. So it may be a decision that we need to sell it. It may be a decision that we need to divest, the family business has changed, but we still have this, petrol station down the end of the village. It doesn't really make a whole lot of money, but it was started. It was a great legacy there. That may not be the right decision for the family business. So in a family business, you absolutely have to make hard decisions for the longevity of the business.
You mentioned there, earlier on about that whole the network there that is very important, even for people before they even get into the family business firm. And I suppose all of those networks, when you do enter the family firm, are also very important. But can we speak to that kind of maybe that you've made the decision to go in and then you're making the decision to leave the family business? It's maybe it's worked out quite well, but if you're looking at your own career, you don't want to retire in it. You want to go off and do other things yourself.
Yeah. So I think what you like, there's a couple of things that need to be put in place. And, you know, if they get them, they come off to the business school, they'll see. So if they do decide to join the business, there's structures that, you know, it's like the way I'd explain it. If you watch, you know, Operational Transformation on RT National Telly, you get, you know, they go on and our Taoiseach did it, and he got his age to say, listen, this is a man in his 40s, and he got an age of somewhere in his 60s, or whatever. So they look and go, well, listen, you know, you need to change your diet, you need to get more exercise, less stress, more mindfulness, all this kind of stuff. So it's the exact same thing in the business. If we stress test or operational transformation a family business, you can very quickly see where the issues or the challenges are. So if you're a next generation person, you need to know what are the structures I can put in place. For example, eating a healthy diet, you know, or, you know, exercising every day. The same logics can be applied into a family business. So what do I mean by that? I'm not going to go into explain it now, but if you do a Google search, it's called a shareholders agreement. And what the shareholders agreement means is, you know, it means how the shares are passed or the wealth is passed in a family business. And to your question you had a second ago, Siobhan, say it's, you know, it's a situation where I've got, you know, three siblings and the wealth has been passed on and I just no longer want to be part of this business. You know, I'm potentially married and I want to go and live in New Zealand and I want to sell the business. The shareholders agreement would stipulate how you sell the shares. So, for example, a lot of family businesses will say, well, if you want to leave, which is obviously your choice and your entitlement, the other family members have to get first choice to buy your shares. So why do they do that? It keeps the ownership in the family, because the fear is maybe someone in the capital markets buy the shares, they have a different strategy than what we as a family have, and before we know it, we've divested a lot of the business and we're in the industry we don't want to be in. So yes, if you do want to leave the business, you absolutely you can and you should if you wish, but you need to have the structures in place that allow for the health and survivability of the business to continue. So just willy-nilly deciding to leave without having a shareholders agreement in place, you're not destined for good things there.
Okay, I just want to bring it back full circle. And I suppose one of the things that you said very early on is that you talked about, you know, think about the GA, whoever sponsors your local team, very embedded in the community, sense of place. So even from, you know, a career planning perspective, these are the sort of things that we would encourage anybody when they're planning their career is to take, I suppose, note of. You know, where do they have a strong sense of place? And you can have a strong sense of place in a number of places in the world or in the country. You know, how involved do you want to be in your community? What do you want to be doing in your community? And what are your interests and hobbies? You know, it's to kind of, you know, when you're looking at that career planning about moving into the family business, is the family business situated in a particular geographic region? You know, can you live in another part of the country or the world and still be very much part of the family business? So it's really for, I suppose, to encourage people that if they're considering doing going into the family business, is to really kind of stand back and kind of see how that will kind of build into their wider life satisfaction and how potentially, particularly that the world has gone a whole lot smaller, how you could potentially be a very active member of your family business, but not necessarily living, you know, and going in and out of the workplace, you know, geographically. You could actually be in another part of the country or the world and be very much involved. So it's just to think maybe a little bit, like evaluate the situation, think a little bit differently, think a little bit laterally. It doesn't have to be done the way it was always done before. And that goes for any career decision. All the careers change anyway, you know, over a course of years, every job changes anyway. So it's just to kind of give people encouragement, you know, just don't assume it has to be the way it always was. Any thoughts on that yourself, Eric?
Yeah, well, there's one, just when you mentioned that, case comes, and we just because you mentioned GAA, if you're from the county of Longford, the GAA team of Longford is sponsored by Glennon Brothers, great fourth generation family business. If you know Longford, they're just located, and you're coming into Longford, the roundabout, well, before the motorway is put in place, just on the right hand side, you see them, Glennon Brothers, run by two brothers, Mike and Pat, which is superbly nice men. they have a very interesting family business that they face a scenario, and they've spoken at our events, just to give you some context to it. They are sawmillers. So you think your house at home, or even, well, not much at DCU, but think your house at home, most of the beams in your roof would have come from a plant like theirs. So they faced a scenario, the 2004 June, actually, ironically, when this webinar, this podcast has been recorded, around this time of the year, they woke up and the whole place is gutted. Like, oh my God, literally, they've 100 years of sawmilling gone, burnt to a crisp. And they're like, wow, what do we do next? And you're like, you talk about emotion, and you're looking at your great granddad who started this, and like, devastated, because you've got, like, obviously your family has been associated with, but obviously you employ families who have worked in this business. So anyway, what they decided to do, most of the timber came from Wicklow or north of Cork around the Fomoy region. What they did was they moved a lot of their operations to Wicklow, and then they, you know, still rebuilt the Midlands operation. But then what happened was, so they got over 2004, and then the construction industry just totally collapsed. 2008 gone. It's like literally going over Niagara Falls. Whoa, profitability, turnover, God, like, what do we do next? So you talk about, you know, we need to do something, or within a month, our business is gone, totally gone. So to your point, the business and what the guys did was they moved operations to Edinburgh. And the reason I say GAA, if you're living or listening to this in Scotland or in Glasgow or Edinburgh, they're very prominent in the GAA in Edinburgh in particular, actually. So what they did, they moved, and they have a very big operation in Edinburgh. But that's an example of a family business. There's no reason why you still need to be based in Longford. You go to Wicklow, you go to North Cork, you go to, you know, Scotland, wherever it might be. But so the family businesses we work here in DCU, they're literally all over the world. And I give you, and I try to keep this one as short as I can, but I have a situation. Again, I won't say, just out of respect to the family, I won't say who they are. But a lot of, if you've ever been to the city of Hong Kong, and there's the border with China, and there's a place called Lo Wu. And one of the fascinating things you see with Lo Wu, it's just right on the border. It's the border town, basically. You see these ladies who are walking across the border, and they've got massive bags, huge, huge bags. And the bags are full. You're like, what are they carrying? Every one of them is huge bags. And what they're carrying is milk and babies' milk. China had a huge scare in the mid-noughties around milk production and quality of milk. So what happened was the Chinese ladies en masse are moving, but traveling to Hong Kong, buying the milk, and then bringing it back across the mainland. Now, where does this go with family business, and how does this relate to Ireland? The two countries in the world which have the best, you know, branded, but obviously the best quality of milk are ourselves in Ireland and New Zealand. And what was happening was the Irish farmer was making baby's milk and then sending it to a distributor in Hong Kong. And then the distributor would sell it, you know, to people coming across the border. But the Irish farmer, and a guy, a DCU student, came to me and said, listen, Eric, this is a joke. You know, why are we sending it to this Chinese distributor? And he takes a huge cut. Why can't we sell it direct? And that's what they did. They make the milk here, or they, you know, the cattle produce the milk, they process it into baby's milk, and then they sell it directly. But one of the strangest things, if you go to, say, Wan Chai or any of the streets in around Hong Kong, you'll see an Irish business which is selling Irish baby food, and the business is booming. So what I mean by that is there's an opportunity from a farming context for entrepreneurship, for innovation, for international growth, and then, for example, you to live and maybe spend some time in Hong Kong or cities of the world.
Oh, that's an amazing story. And it's really about just noticing the gap and having the confidence and, you know, to evaluate that idea and going for it and making it happen. So I suppose from a career choice point of view, I just might finish up with this to any of our listeners. So what I'm hearing from this is, yes, it's a complex decision to both enter the family business. It can be complex to stay in it and, you know, leave your legacy. That's without a shadow of a doubt. But what I'm also hearing from the conversation today, it's very important to have an honest conversation with yourself. So ourselves here in the career service, you know, we'll have a, you know, it's a confidential, non-judgmental service. So you can come along and have that honest conversation, you know, about what your own feelings are about it. But then it's to know and unpack that then, and to know then there is actually quite a number of really, really good supportive structures, either whether it's like things like you said about the shareholders agreement, you know, things like the networking that you can do, the resources and the guidance that would be from the National Centre for Family Business about how you kind of approach these, you know, potentially difficult topics and chunk them down into manageable workloads for family businesses to work through. And it's not only just for the person entering the business's satisfaction, but it's to the broader family satisfaction, but also to really make the business thrive at the end of the day. There's no point us all being very happy in ourselves with our agreements, but, you know, the business is going down the swanny at the same time when we're off doing being happy with ourselves. So it's to try and get that balance right, I think, is really, really important. Just before we finish up, I'd just like to ask, you know, you know so much about this area, but just bearing in mind, you know, person might be deciding to go into the family business or not, as the case may be, what would be your top tip in around this?
I think it's an incredible opportunity. I think it's the country we live in, the skills that you're getting in DCU. I would suggest to have it, as I said, an honest conversation with yourself. I would suggest get yourself a mentor, which is something I didn't speak about earlier on. Get a mentor outside of, you know, you hear mentor, oh yeah, what does that mean? You need to get somebody you can just meet for coffee 3 or 4 times a year. Just to listen, can I shoot the breeze with you? Let's throw a few things on a piece of paper here. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? So I would encourage you to get a mentor. I would encourage you to work outside the business, if it's at all possible. Maybe it's not, but get some time outside the business, 4 or 5 years, go and see the world, get upskilled. And then, you know, start to have the conversation with your folks or with your, you know, whoever, your guardians or whatever it is. Have that conversation. But say, listen, it's not the right time for me now. I do want to work out. I love this business. I see great opportunity for it. But let me go and do and fulfill what I got to do. And, you know, I got to upskill myself. But I want to come back. And I just need time and, go and enjoy and see the world.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for that. Listen, I think that's been very powerful for our listeners on that. It is, as you said, it's a big topic. And I think there's loads for potential for people to go away and say, right, because of listening to this, I'm going to do A, B and C. And that's great signposting. So thank you so much for your time, Eric.
Delighted to help. Thank you.